Cloud. All right. Welcome, everyone. If you'd like to find your place in the book for our reading this evening, we are on Cameo 18, Meditation and Guidance. So we will be reading about a little bit about meditation, more so about guidance in this cameo. But as always, before we do that, let's spend a little time in quiet. I know I need it. It has been I've had quite an intense week. Lots going on. All right. So settling in. Allowing your eyes to close and drawing attention from without to within. And returning within to this quiet space that abides deep within the mind, deep within the core of our being. And it's here that we connect with the Holy Spirit, with each other, and with the truth. Finding your willingness to loose the world from all we thought it was. Whatever it is that's on your mind, whatever thoughts from the week, from situations that you've been involved in, whatever it is, being willing to loose everything from what we thought it was. Handing it all over to Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is everything. And centering the Holy Spirit in your mind. And just resting for a few breaths. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge tonight by our request, by your, I've always been waiting for when I'm going to mess that up, and there it goes. Let's just place it all in the Holy Spirit's hands. Take a few mindful deep breaths in and out, and placing the Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. With that love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of this time and place. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I have to laugh. It's funny. Through the years, I think I've been saying that and that closing prayer every single call for the past 9 or 10 years, because that is the same closing that my stepdad used to use when we were in our in-person group. And I've had a few times when I've come very close to just having like a total brain stop and the words, you know, just not being there. And I've always meant to tell you all that, like, I might have to just like have it on my wall as a backup, and I've never done it. And there we go. I had the thought of like, am I forgetting this? And then I was like, no. And then, yeah, that's all right. Oh, funny. Yes.
We have a guest.
Who do we have as a guest?
Bernie Sanders. Look at Cheryl's.
I'm not seeing.
she's got Bernie.
Oh. Oh, that's a riot. I thought we had a Zoom crasher. I thought like Bernie Sanders was going to cut within our Zoom room. Bernie. Oh, that's hysterical. That's awesome, Cheryl. I don't know if you've all heard about the Zoom crashers. We had to be on the lookout for them. Yeah, apparently when a lot of schools and programs when the pandemic first started were coming onto Zoom. There were people who would get, I guess, Zoom details from Facebook or wherever that were public, and they'd show up and, you know, show porn or like do something inappropriate. So when you said Bernie Sanders is here, I was like, oh no. I had a moment of concern about a Zoom crasher, but not the case. So anyway, as I mentioned before, we're going to read Cameo 18 this evening on meditation and guidance. So this is on page 1794 of the CE edition. And let's go ahead and dive in. So as I mentioned previously, it's a little bit about meditation and more so about guidance. And I'm sure that we are going to all be able to relate to Helen and Bill and the guidance that Jesus gives them. So let's go ahead and dive in. So Cameo 18, meditation and guidance. The text section, asking and following, which is from chapter 4, was edited from a lengthy set of personal notes that were not transcribed into the text. These notes deal with Helen's difficulties with meditation and Bill's difficulties with guidance, both of which could be resolved by the suspension of judgment. To make this material applicable to all students and thus suitable for the course, we had to remove about a third of it and reorder some of it as well. For this reason, it seemed appropriate to devote a cameo essay to the discourse in its original form. Before I start reading Jesus's guidance here, what Jesus says, I just have to highlight what I sort of just emphasized in this first paragraph, that Helen's difficulties with meditation and Bill's difficulties with guidance, both of which could be solved by the suspension of judgment. So suspending judgment, releasing judgment does a lot for us. And so I just have to emphasize that because I know we can all relate. So here we go, here's the dictation. Paragraph A, to Helen's question about her reactions to meditation and also Bill's question. The reason for the fear reaction is quite apparent. You have not yet been able to suspend judgment and have merely succeeded in weakening your control over it. Since you have an unfortunate tendency to be self-punishing, you believe that control of judgment is a self-preserving function and therefore require it as a necessary defense of yourself. Weakening this defense deliberately is thus perceived as dangerous vulnerability, which frightens you. This is Jesus's explanation of why Helen is finding meditation frightening. In meditation, she is attempting to still her mind, to clear it of the thick web of judgments that usually clogs it. However, rather than backing off from her judgments completely, suspending them, she has only backed off far enough to loosen her control over them. The result is that her judgments have seemed to take on a life of their own. It's as if she has a case of mental Tourette syndrome with her mind involuntarily blurting out insults. Keeping these judgments carefully in check has been a key defense of hers against self-condemnation, and so losing control of her judgments presents her with a frightening situation. Meditation has become a source of fear. The guidance continues. Bill was right that you should ask before attempting it, meditation again. It would be very unwise to try it before we can do it together, as I told you last night. I assure you, I will be vigilant in identifying the right time. And as I told you very clearly, next time we will do it together. I did not tell you when that will be because I do not know. You will tell me that, but may not recognize that you have done so. That is why you need me to relay your own message back to you. When we are both ready, it cannot fail. In the face of her fear, so this is the commentary, in the face of her fear, Jesus urges Helen to wait until she is ready before trying to meditate again. She won't know when she has reached this readiness, but when she has, something deep in her mind will whisper this news to Jesus, and he will then relay the message to her conscious mind. As he says, "You need me to relay your own message back to you." At that point, according to Jesus, it will be crucial that he and Helen meditate together. If you are afraid of what your wayward impulses might do, the best thing to do is sit down and hold hands with someone you trust. So let's pause there for a minute. So Helen has developed a fear of meditation because rather than totally suspend her judgments, she's only backed up enough to kind of lose control over them. And therefore, her judgments now seem to be, I guess, overtaking her in some way. And so she's now feeling fear apparently when she is meditating. And I just am so struck. I think this paragraph is so incredibly beautiful that Jesus is advising Helen to ask before meditating. He wants to do it together. And I'm just wondering if we can all just think of something maybe that you're currently dealing with or currently facing where you're feeling nervous or a little concerned, and thinking about doing it, holding hands with someone that you trust, Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Personally, I can share that I was writing, I'm in discussion about a situation with a few friends, and I needed to address something with someone in this conversation. And the way that I was wanting to write things, it wasn't coming out right. As I could read my email, I knew that what I was writing, it wasn't coming out right. It wasn't going to be received right. And it wasn't until I really paused and stepped away from it and said, "Holy Spirit, I want to write this with you. I want to do this with you. I have no desire in this situation but to heal." And Corinne's desires that I will acknowledge, and here they are, you know, X, Y, and Z, I'm handing those over to you. So it can be just such a great practice to just pause and imagine stepping back whenever we're going into any kind of situation. I mean, really for anything whatsoever, to just imagine that we can do this together, us and the Holy Spirit, or you and Jesus, whoever it is that you're most connected with, that you feel most comfortable with. That you'll do it together. It's fascinating also. Now, this speaks to some of like the deeper teachings of the Course. We might not recognize when we're making progress, but Holy Spirit, Jesus can recognize when we are, because perhaps there's something deep in our mind that's deeper than our conscious awareness that is communicating with Jesus, that is communicating with the Holy Spirit about our own readiness. And the end of this paragraph seems to indicate just that. You will, when Jesus says, "I did not tell you when that will be because I do not know, you will tell me that, but may not recognize that you have done so. That is why you need me to relay your own message back to you." So that's indicating, as it explains in the next paragraph, that there's something deep in Helen's mind that would whisper some sort of readiness to Jesus, to the Holy Spirit. And it's at that moment, then, you know, Jesus is going to do whatever is being, you know, called for in that situation. So I just thought that was really cool too, to just always remember that even if we think a certain way or certain that our progress is or isn't, or that we're doing good or that we're doing bad, remember that that's the exact judgment that can get in our way of hearing guidance, that's the exact judgment that can get in our way during a meditation. And we can trust that there's something deep inside of us that knows and that is in constant communication with the Holy Spirit, with Jesus, whoever you're comfy with. Any comments or questions before I continue reading? Dave.
So is that the same thing that the Course talks about where it says you don't know your advances from your retreats?
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. We don't know our advances from our retreats. We think when we're making great progress, we're actually stepping back probably into the ego. We think that when we're doing a really crap job at whatever, that we're actually perhaps in a huge state of surrender or whatever, and actually, you know, making leaps and bounds in terms of our growth. So that's absolutely what I was thinking of, Dave. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyone else? Okay, let's keep reading. So we pick up with some of the dictation from Helen. In answer to Bill's question as to why he has so much difficulty in communication, you were right in what you said in the cab, and Bill could not listen. However, he seems to be able to listen quite carefully to the notes. Ask him, please, to listen very carefully to these. Now Jesus turns to Bill's question, which is about why Bill has so much difficulty in communication. This probably refers to Bill's difficulties in receiving communication from Jesus. This appears to be an ongoing question for Bill, since this was the subject of the guidance with which the dictation of the course began. That was back in Cameo 1. It also appears that Bill has resistance to the answer, for Helen apparently touched on the answer in something she said in the cab, and Bill could not listen. Since he wouldn't listen to the truth when it came from her, Jesus is now hoping he will listen when it comes from him. So the dictation continues. If you ask me for guidance, you have signified your willingness to give over your own control, at least to some extent. Your frequent failure to ask at all indicates that at such times, you are not willing to go even that far. But when you at least ask, you are acting on a cooperative thought, even though it may not lack ambivalence. You are therefore entitled to a specific answer, but unless you follow it without judging it, you will become defensive about the next steps which you will take. Jesus outlines a process in which the key element is the giving over of control. When you fail to ask for guidance, which Bill and Helen, along with the rest of us, frequently do, it is because you don't want to give over control of the situation. Conversely, when you do ask for guidance, that shows that you have at least some willingness to give up control and to instead cooperate with Jesus. This willingness entitles you to receive a specific answer. However, unless you follow it without judging it, you will become defensive and cooperation will break down again. As we will see, judging it is actually the key issue for Bill. And let's just pause there for a moment. So again, just to emphasize a few really beautiful points here. We often fail to ask for guidance, right? We just don't ask at all. And that means we're not willing to let go of control at all if we're not asking. And yet, at the same time, I want to emphasize that asking doesn't need to be verbal. You can have that sort of open asking in your heart without having to actually say the words. It can just be, you know, that wish of your heart to be guided. And that is enough. When Jesus says, if you ask me for guidance, you have signified your willingness to give over your own control, at least to some extent. And this, again, we have to remember that the Course is asking us only to have that tiny little bit of willingness. It doesn't need to be complete. It doesn't need to be perfect. It's about us handing over our little bit of willingness and the Holy Spirit. As we've read before in that quote I often share, it's the Holy Spirit's job to exchange our little bit of willingness for a lot of willingness, or our unwillingness for willingness. It's also interesting, isn't it interesting how it says you're therefore entitled to a specific answer? Because how many times do we ask for guidance and we don't necessarily get something specific? And yet here it is saying that we are entitled to something specific, but that the cooperation will break down again if we are judging, if we come back to judging about maybe what that guidance is or what the next steps would be. Before I keep reading, any comments or questions? Hi, Deidre. I love your pink trees.
Hey, Corinne, I have a quick question.
Sure. Hi, Uma.
Hey. So I get confused about the word judgment. maybe this is a really basic course question, but I mean, isn't it just any thought? It's just any thought, right?
We could say technically it's any thought outside of love.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of like the most basic way that I would think about it. Because if it's anything other than love, it's not in the loving thought system. It's not in the Holy Spirit's thought system. And so it's gotta be ego. So it can be really subtle then. It doesn't have to be like an all out obvious judgment. It can be something really subtle.
So with Bill, then the judgment issue is that he's judging the guidance that he's getting.
We're going to read about that actually. I'm trying to remember what way we're going to read it very shortly. I think has his mind made up that it's always like this outcome or that outcome. And so he closes down other possibilities. I think that that's one of the things.
And then with Helen, you might've said this already, but what is the judgment that's getting in the way of meditation? I probably just messed up.
Her judgment, let's see. It had to do, so she usually has lots of judgments, it says. And rather than just totally suspending those judgments, she's only backed up away from them enough that she's like loosened her control. Like she feels like she has to stay in control on her judgments because there's so many. So she loosens up a little bit in meditation, but doesn't totally let the judgments go. And just by loosening up those judgments a little bit in meditation, they start to like get overwhelming. And so she's now like afraid of the meditation. She's associated meditating with fear.
Okay. Okay. I think I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, if there's anything more about her judgments, I'm not seeing it. Since you have an unfortunate tendency to be self-punishing, which is self-judgmental, this is Jesus's words towards Helen. You believe that control of judgment is a self-preserving function. So that gives us a little bit more detail too. Helen has a tendency, like the rest of us, to be self-punishing. So we judge ourselves, we're harsh on ourselves. And so she's thinking that she has to control that to preserve herself. So maybe she's letting up a little bit and instead all the like negative thoughts about herself could be coming in. So that gives us a little bit more of a clue as to what those judgments might be. Yeah, thanks for that question, Uma. I wouldn't have zeroed in on that. Thank you. Anybody else? Dave.
I'm a little confused about specific guidance. At least for myself, when I feel like I'm getting guidance, it's usually just a sense of peace. And I can't really think of a time when I've received anything, you know, go here and do this, you know, kind of a thing. Although peace kind of makes it like okay for me to do whatever I'm doing. It's like I'm in a flow. And so I don't judge myself or judge the actions that I might take. Mm-hmm. I think you see where I'm going with that.
Absolutely.
I just wondered if you receive specific guidance or what the advantage is or.
Well, to your point, most of the time when I'm feeling guidance, it feels that sense of peace. It feels in the flow. It feels right. It feels like literally like a step has appeared before me, and that's then what I'll step onto. Okay. So that's usually how it is for me. Occasionally, I have gotten very specific things, and it's really funny that this really random example just came to mind because I haven't thought of this in a long time. But 5 years ago, I was dressed and getting ready to, I think, go teach out of my house. I was like leaving to get in the car and go drive. And as I was approaching the door to leave, I got this overwhelming feeling of go change your clothes. And I was just like, I'm fine with what I'm wearing, but it was overwhelming. And I went in the bedroom and started changing my clothes. And I had a deer tick crawling on me. It hadn't yet bitten me. But I saw it and I got it off and was like, wow, and changed my clothes and then went on. So was that felt like guidance to me. Was it I don't know what it was, intuition, you know, whatever most people would say that guidance and intuition are the same thing. That was very specific. So that's situations like that are very rare, but I usually have guidance as you're describing it. It's a feeling of just sort of knowing. It feels right. It feels like the logic, like the absolute correct next step. Even sometimes it has like a, like when it's something specific, I'm thinking I'm right now writing. Probably most of you have seen my open letter to the course community on unexamined racism. And I'm working with it right now to make a shorter version for Miracles Magazine. And when I was writing that, it felt like I was told, like, do this right now. Like it was a specific thing to do. So it does come specifically at times, but anybody, thank you, Dave, for bringing this up. Does anybody else, Paula, you want to?
Corinne, I don't think it always comes specifically as what to do. I was going on a business trip and I was going to be flying out to Seattle, and I had never really flown before. So I was very frightened of the thought of doing, you know, of flying. And I was in the shower and I wasn't asking for guidance, but all of a sudden I got this idea. My God, my niece is 16 years old and she's a pilot. I'm 40 and I'm frightened of flying. It just all of a sudden put everything in perspective for me. Mm-hmm. I had the best time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all worked out so beautifully. But so it's not always do this. Sometimes it's you just get an idea, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that shifts the perception into a whole different realm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's beautiful, Paula. Thank you for that. Those thoughts just drop in. I think I heard Tanya.
Hi, Corinne. Yes,
hi, Tanya.
Did.
Hello.
Hi. Excuse me. I wanted to speak to this. As we're all discussing, there's different kinds of picking up on guidance. And guidance is something that I've been paying a lot of attention to these past few months. And for me, sometimes guidance comes really clearly. Mm-hmm. And then other times, and this is more often, when I want to know how to proceed with something and I want guidance, my self-doubt really overwhelms me. So I've really been working with Jesus on this. Mm-hmm. And specifically in two areas in my life that are big. Mm-hmm. One has to do with business, and one has to do with a very dear friend, mm-hmm. who has very advanced lung cancer. So I there are two areas that it really matters to me, mm-hmm. to be doing the right thing when it's not so obvious to me exactly what the right thing might be. Mm-hmm. And for me, two tools that I'm sure Jesus helped me with, because this is what has come to me and it's what's really been helping me, is if I have a decision to make, I ask myself, and I'm feeling a lot of emotion around it because I'm I feel my emotions excruciatingly, mm-hmm. intensely, mm-hmm. to the point where sometimes it's just really difficult for me to tap into. My dog's digging up his bed. If you hear some strange noises in the background, that's Henry. So it can be really hard for me to get through the murk of my, mm-hmm. own emotions. Mm-hmm. So the tools that have come to me are, what is motivating? So say a thought comes to me to do this. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure, is that guidance? Is that me? Is that my ego? So what I do, what's really helped me in these two areas, is asking myself, well, what is motivating me? Mm. What feeling am I feeling? And how will I feel if I do this as it came to me? Mm-hmm. Because I'm never clear, did I just think this up? Is, mm-hmm. this guidance? Is it? That's where I've really needed help and really asked Jesus, to really step in, Jesus and the Holy Spirit, please, you know, mm-hmm. you have an open invitation, and I need your help, involve yourselves in my life. And I feel like a kid whose training wheels have just come off the bike, because I've been doing this enough now, and I'm still, you know, sometimes I'm still scared. Today I sent a Jesus-guided text to our dear friend who's got cancer. And I, you know, that's an area that I really question. I want to say the right thing, but I really feel Jesus is telling me what to send. And then my doubt kicks in, and I follow those tools, and I'm starting to trust my guidance more. Mm. So I just wanted to put that out there, because for me, that's been a really, that's a huge deal. It makes me feel more grounded and more trusting and more connected. Like I'm not just free floating out there in a sea of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. Guidance is there. And in my very, what feels like my very faulty, flawed way, I've asked for it, and I'm working through the murk mm-hmm. of my self-doubt and very strong emotions.
Wow. Tanya, I am so grateful that you shared such practical questions. And for anybody who didn't get those, I wrote them down. And make sure, please tell me that I got these if I didn't get these right. But I think you said, what is motivating me? You questioned that. What is motivating me? If you have a thought about, you know, something that you can do. And how will I feel if I do this? Those are the two questions you said, right?
Yes.
Those are so helpful and so powerful. And I mean, both of those questions really get to the heart of what's going on. I love, and I relate in particular, how will I feel if I do this? I think I try that on. You just put words to something that I recognize in myself also, that I'm constantly trying on. If something's dropping in, I'm trying it on. How does it feel? What would it feel like, you know, going in that direction? So you're giving us a roadmap through the murk of our own stuff, our own emotions, because it's just so beautiful to hear you say that through asking yourself those questions, that you're working through the murk and that you're trusting your guidance more and feeling more grounded and more centered. So that is a gift for all of us. And I thank you deeply for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. Really helpful.
You know, that's Corinne. Uh-huh. That's another good reason for doing the workbook lessons, because they normally put you through the paces, you know, ask the questions that clarify the direction you want to go.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. And at the same time, you know, we're not always doing the lessons, you know, sometimes like as at the end of the lessons, it says your lessons will now show up in your life. And so these questions are just such good questions to point us back to finding our way through. But you're absolutely right, Paula. This is, you know, the workbook is always going to challenge us too. That's another great tool that we have. I also just want to emphasize something that Tanya just said that I think is so important that's worth mentioning. Again, it's about working through the murk, the murkiness. It's about working through it, the key word being through, because often we want to skip over, we want to bypass, we don't want to go into the murk because the murk is uncomfortable and sometimes scary. And yet working through the murk is how we develop our trust. I mean, Tanya, you just named it so clearly that you're finding that you're trusting your guidance more, feeling more grounded, more connected. That's what working through does for us versus trying to, you know, leapfrog over something and not maybe go to some of those more challenging places. So that's awesome. Thank you, Tanya, again. Oh, wow. Okay, shall we keep reading? Let's keep reading. We have a bit more to go. That was great. So I think, okay, we're on page 1796, and I'm about to pick up at the very bottom part where it's now the dictation again. right? I'm starting with you, Helen, asked merely what you should do now. Is that okay? Good. You, Helen, asked merely what you should do now. The answer was to tell Jack to pick you up at 3. Bill's reaction to this was unfortunate, and yours was much more constructive, making it particularly unfortunate that Bill accepted your very correct response to his reactions with irritation. But this was inevitable because he had already given way to fear. Then you reacted to his mistake with irritation, and we lost our communication for a time. Let us try to reestablish our connection now. Bill was unwise in deciding on his own that unless you went to his apartment, Jack would be in trouble. This association meant that he saw only one alternative and was unable to keep an open mind. Certainly, he should be confident that any guidance which comes from me will not jeopardize anyone. It should also be noted that he projected his misperception onto you, assuming that you were counting on magic to get Jack to take you home in spite of the traffic and not realizing the situation as it is. I would like to tell him for you that this was a misperception of his, and although you have done this at times in the past, you were not doing it then. As you very correctly stated, but Bill could not listen at the time, you were merely reporting a message for which you had asked and were not judging the outcome. Bill was. If you can continue not to evaluate my messages and merely follow them, they will lead to good for everyone. Since this is the same area of difficulty which is causing both of you trouble with meditation, practice in this is essential. I'm underlining that. Practice in this is essential because I'm bringing this back to what Tanya just shared. Working through the murk is practicing. It's the same thing. We're practicing. We're always practicing. You know, yeah, that's we're in practice mode here in this world. So, continuing. We don't know the details of the situation, but the issue was clearly about Helen getting home from work. Among the possible options, she could, 1, get Jack, her taxi driver, to come pick her up and take her home in spite of traffic, or 2, go to Bill's apartment instead. Faced with this issue of how to get home, Helen did the right thing. She asked for guidance, received a genuine message, and reported it to Bill. Bill, on the other hand, was not so open. He could only see one course of action. Unless Helen went to his apartment, Jack would be in trouble. That's quote unquote. Given the assumed rightness of this plan, it seemed obvious to Bill that what Helen heard was an error. Indeed, in Bill's view, she didn't hear guidance at all. She merely inserted her own magical thinking where Jesus's voice should have been. It is true, she had done this at times before, but Jesus says that in this instance, Bill was projecting his own error onto her. It was his idea that was shutting out Jesus's voice, but he then projected this undesirable quality onto her guidance. Bill's whole error lay in assuming that his option, that Helen should go to his apartment, was the only option. Once that was assumed, then any other idea, including Jesus's, had to be judged as being an error. That is what Jesus means by judging the outcome rather than following his messages. Since Bill assumed that only his idea would have a positive outcome, he had to judge Jesus's idea as leading to a negative outcome, and this would obviously result in not following it. Now we can see the connection between Helen's difficulties in meditation and Bill's difficulties with guidance. Both involve the chronic intrusion of judgment. Helen is unable to suspend her judgments during meditation, and Bill is unable to let go of his judgments about Jesus's guidance. And we'll read in just a moment, but I just want to emphasize that, again, Bill's error, as Jesus is pointing it out, is assuming that his option was the only option. Or even if we assume that it's either got to be A, B, or C, and it has to be one of these three things, then we're not going to be open to option D. Or if we get you know, guidance, or somebody suggests maybe something that's coming from guidance for a totally different option, we're going to dismiss it because we don't think it could possibly work. So that's just a brilliant little nugget from Jesus. Let's keep reading. I do not yet know what decisions those who are involved in what is happening later today will make. But I assure you with a confidence, I urge you to share that whatever they may be can be utilized for good if you will let them be. That was a long sentence. I want to read that one more time. This is Jesus speaking. I do not yet know what decisions those who are involved in whatever is happening later today will make. But I assure you with a confidence, I urge you to share that whatever they may be can be utilized for good if you will let them be. Why not unburden yourselves of the kind of responsibility which you cannot meet and devote yourselves in peace to the many others which you can discharge without strain? It is your responsibility to recognize the difference. Any confusion in this respect is arrogance. Note also that I specifically told you, in answer to your own question of this morning, that miracles should be offered both to Art and to your brother. And our footnote tells us that Art was a colleague of Helen's, and the brother referred to here was Helen's brother, Adolf. They are urgently needed for you, although this is not the spirit in which you must undertake them. You have hurt yourselves and need healing. It does not matter whether the people you think have hurt you have really thought hurtfully. You have. We must undo this, and your attempts will surely be blessed. So, quote, the kind of responsibility which you cannot meet seems to be Helen and Bill predicting the decisions that people in their lives will make later in the day. This, of course, is an impossible undertaking. Even Jesus doesn't know what people will do with their free will, and to try to shoulder a burden so beyond them can only be a strain. It is also labeled arrogance. Among the responsibilities which you can discharge without strain seems to be Helen and Bill following Jesus's guidance for how to respond to the decisions these same people make. If Bill and Helen will do this, they will allow whatever those decisions may be to be utilized for good. Helen and Bill's role is to recognize the difference between these two responsibilities, set the first one aside, and place all their focus on the second. So I'll just pause there before we finish up this section. The one bit that stands out to me that I think is, I mean, there's a few great points in here where it says at the end of the guidance we just read, the dictation we just read, you have hurt yourselves and need healing. It does not matter whether the people you think have hurt you have really thought hurtfully. You have. We must undo this and your attempts will surely be blessed. So if we get caught in thinking, this to me is saying that if we think that other people have hurt us, we have to stop and take a look at how we have thought hurtfully. So again, this is where like the Course gives us no slack. It's always pointing back to us first to look at that. And I think I won't bother summing up this responsibility thing because I think the what we just read sums it up nicely. Before I continue with the rest of, probably the rest of the cameo, we have like maybe 2.5 to 3 pages left. Any comments or questions? I'm gonna take a drink of water. Okay, we're good. Let's keep going. In the meantime, Jesus reminds Helen about the guidance she had received for that day. In the morning, she had asked him a question, which, judging from the answer, may have been about which miracles to perform that day, which should reflect instructions given earlier in the course itself. You should begin each day with the prayer, "Help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today." The answer to her question was to offer miracles both to her brother, Adolf, and a colleague, Art. No doubt, sorry, my phone is ringing. I'm not sure if you can all hear that. I'm going to just mute this really quick. Okay. Now I lost my place. Was it no doubt Adolf and Art had needs? Is that where I am? Yes. Okay. Thank you. No doubt Adolf and Art had needs that Helen could help with, but there was more to these situations than that. These were relationships in which Helen likely felt injured. She had never been close to her brother, who was 14 years older than her. She said of him, he was very busy and did not seem to like little girls very much. And Art, who was co-director of the Department of Psychology with Bill, had a tremendous dislike of Helen and even urged Bill to fire her. Jesus, however, says that people's presumed hurtfulness toward Helen is actually irrelevant. It does not matter whether the people you think have hurt you have really thought hurtfully. What matters, he says, is that she has thought hurtfully of them. That is what has really hurt her. And that is why it is so urgent that she give them miracles. By doing so, she will not only be healing to them, she will also be wiping away her own past lovelessness through which she had injured herself. Next paragraph. Since both of you have asked me to point up errors in perceiving, I would suggest that Bill review carefully his reactions to your suggestion that you go over the case at Neuro, the Neurological Institute. Even though you did not ask, which was a mistake, Bill immediately evaluated the suggestion in terms of his own convenience, which was another mistake. Your motives were not uncharitable, even though your failure to ask for guidance was a sign of fear. You thought that Art would be able to understand Bill's going to the hospital while he could not understand your presence at Psychiatric Institute. Bill's reaction did not take alternate possibilities into account, which is one of his major problems. He should also train himself to learn that alternate possibilities are better not left up to him. Whenever he reacts as though they are, he will have trouble. If you had asked where to go, and Bill had been willing to forego control of the decision, whatever you had done would have been only benign. Could we continue the day in that spirit? If you will help Bill overcome his irritation, which is totally unjustified in spite of his misperception, you will not only help him, but enable both of us to help you. This will institute the chain of helpfulness and harmlessness, which always leads to the atonement and becomes a powerful part of its beneficence. So we're going to read the recap of this in just a moment. Before we do that, one thing that struck me that I underlined with a little star is that when it was saying that Bill should also train himself to learn that alternate possibilities are better not left up to him. Whenever he reacts as though they are, he will have trouble. So this to me is just another reminder of pointing to the fact that when we turn it all over to the Holy Spirit, all the possibilities, rather than trying to figure it out ourselves, that we're going to be better off. If we're taking on responsibility of alternate possibilities and trying to figure it all out, we're going to have trouble. It reminds me of how I have heard that many Nobel laureates report having received their breakthrough idea at night when they were quiet, when they weren't trying to think and, you know, figure it out, that answer comes in stillness. So that's a great reminder. Let's go ahead and just finish up this cameo. We just have a little bit to go. Jesus now reviews another situation that would have been best served by Helen and Bill following guidance together. Helen had suggested that she and Bill go to the Neurological Institute to go over a case together. Even though she hadn't asked for guidance about this, which was a sign of fear, her heart was in the right place in that she chose that location out of consideration of what Art, to whom she was supposed to give miracles that day, would find understandable. Bill, however, was irritated by this because he saw her idea only in terms of its inconvenience for him. This reaction, Jesus says, did not take alternate possibilities into account, which is one of his major problems. Indeed, this is the very same problem that we saw before. It seems that Bill has a habit of settling on a particular alternative, and in light of it, evaluating any other alternatives as incorrect. This apparently is the answer to his question as to why he has so much difficulty in communication with Jesus. The main source of Bill's problem then is post-guidance, after the guidance has been received. He narrowly evaluates any guidance against his own preferred option. Perhaps it is just this lack of openness to Jesus's direction that keeps him from hearing that direction in the first place. What Bill needs then is to let go of control. He needs to give over control by asking what to do. As he listens, he needs to give up control of what the alternatives are, realizing that alternate possibilities are better not left up to him. And once the guidance comes, he needs to forego control and let the guidance dictate what is actually done. Jesus then proposes that Bill and Helen continue the day with him in a new spirit, a spirit of asking for guidance and open-mindedly following whatever guidance is received. He further suggests that if she will help Bill get past his irritation, this will allow Bill and Jesus to turn around and help her, thus forging the chain of miracles that Jesus so often talks about. And then some dictation, I offer far more than partial guidance, although you do not ask for more. The uneven quality of your skill in both asking and following my direction is due to the alternations you experience between ego and miracle-oriented perception. I want to read that sentence one more. I'm going to read this paragraph one more time from Jesus. I offer far more than partial guidance, although you do not ask for more. The uneven quality of your skill in both asking and following my direction is due to the alternations you experience between ego and miracle-oriented perception. This is a strain, but fortunately, one which can be overcome along with the rest. There will never be a time when I do not will to try again. You might be gladdened by remembering that. So the commentary continues in this final paragraph. Jesus's guidance is a constant. It is there for all of Helen and Bill's situations. They, however, continually alternate between turning toward him and turning away, don't we all? As their desire for control kicks in, they turn away, refusing to ask for guidance, or if they ask, refusing to follow what they hear. As they relax that need for control, they turn back toward him and both ask and follow. This state in which two opposing sides contend within them is a strain, and it can feel like there is no way out of this strain. Yet they can overcome it, and Jesus will always be there to assist them. His offer of help is unceasing. It never runs out. No matter how many times they fail to ask and to follow, they can always put their failures behind them and renew their efforts, remembering his promise. There will never be a time when I do not will to try again. I'm going to say that one more time. Words from Jesus. There will never be a time when I do not will to try again. So he is there as a constant. And we did it. Next cameo is done, or I should say today's cameo is done. I don't feel moved to say anything. Does anybody, Dave?
Just how many more cameos are there for us to go through?
There are 31. No, 30, nope. 33.
Still to go or in total?
33 total. And we just finished 18.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Just curious.
A little bit more. a bit longer. And lengthwise, I don't know if, you know, we'll have shorter ones and longer ones still, I'm sure. Nikki, I see your hand.
Hi.
Hi.
Looking ahead at the future cameos, does it talk more about how Helen resolved things with her brother?
I don't remember reading that anywhere. Does anybody know?
Okay.
I don't think so. Yeah.
And then are there any other more practical examples of Helen having like a past hurt and how Jesus advised her specifically and practically to overcome that?
Well, we're going to see bits and pieces of that, I think, always, because the healing of relationships is what this whole book is about. So I can't think of anything specifically. I mean, I would not call myself an expert in any of these cameos, and so, or any of this for that matter, but I'm sure we're going to see bits and pieces of that because, again, this is what this course is all about, with overcoming, you know, the practical guidance for overcoming that hurt, to point back to what Paula said before about the workbook lessons, that's definitely going to challenge us, you know, with looking at those areas that hurt and those areas that we are in pain. And I guess the only other words that come forward at this moment, again, is just that recognition. Actually, I'm looking at them right now. Jesus's guidance is a constant, that the Holy Spirit is a constant, that is always the answer, even though we might need more specifics.
Yeah.
In some ways, but
the one thing that I think that I found like a charge to was the fact that it was a past family relationship one. We hear a lot about her with like coworkers and current work scenarios. So I thought that this was pretty like, ooh, what happened?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if anything else comes up, but good question.
Thank you.
But at the same time, it's all the same, because whether it's happening now or in the past, it's happening in our minds and we're experiencing it or re-experiencing it based on a memory. So really the answer would be the same for either. So, but thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
Corinne.
Yes, Paula.
This one, Jesus sort of mentions this as a couple of times when he's speaking about Helen. It doesn't matter whether the people you think have hurt you have really thought hurtfully. What matters, he says, is that she has thought hurtfully of them. So, I mean, that's kind of like, it's your thoughts alone that cause you pain, right? It's really not the situation. It's nothing really outside of you that's causing your pain. It's your thoughts about the situation.
It's our thoughts. Yes, absolutely. And that's what it says, that, you know, it's always, what page are you on when you were reading that?
1799 paragraph. Oh, it's like three paragraphs down. Jesus, however, says that people's presumed hurtfulness towards Helen is actually
irrelevant. So, yes, it absolutely, our work is to always come back to looking at our hurtful thoughts, that, you know, those judgment thoughts, those thoughts that are in our mind, remembering at the same time that out there, in contradiction to what's passed around in many, you know, course circles, that there's nobody out there. These are all of our brothers. You know, we've laid egos on top of everybody, but everybody out there is our brother. And so, you know, the course is pointing us to also this idea that like a lot of what happens in the world is from the collective. It's all of us. It's all of our hurtful thoughts. So our part is to rid ourselves, in a sense, of, in terms of looking at with the Holy Spirit, that purification process of looking within and handing over to the Holy Spirit and taking responsibility and owning those thoughts that hurt.
Instead of projecting it out on your brother.
Yeah, absolutely. While still
recognizing that when we're in a situation of something that is hurtful, like let's say somebody is being hurtful toward you, physically, emotionally, mentally, whatever, it doesn't mean standing there and saying, oh, this is just my thoughts that I need to change. We need to do that work, but it also, right, you know, doesn't mean that we're going to be saying that that's okay. So, yeah.
It's tricky.
Tricky. Carla's here. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Can I add to what Paula was saying?
Sure. Who's this?
Cheryl.
Oh, hi, Cheryl.
I was really paying attention to that part too, about where Jesus was saying that it didn't matter that Helen was holding on to this past hurt, that she needed to basically let that go. Because I mean, I can relate this to something that went on this week and with somebody that was vocalizing her past hurt about someone. And I got involved and felt like I was getting involved because I didn't feel like that it was right that the person was bringing up this stuff about someone else without their opportunity to defend themselves and the whole story behind it, where they didn't realize that they were hurting the person, but yet the person was still making it public. And I think that there's a lot to be said about where Jesus is saying to let that go, because I think that we make it. And I remember there's something else in the course where he's talking about this, where we make a wrong, we continue the error because we're projecting it onward, you know, to other people in this particular case. And like, I found myself getting involved and having my own defensiveness come up in me. And then it's funny because when I got defensive and frustrated about it, then I was getting attacked by others. And then I was like, whoa, why am I getting attacked? Oh, well, because obviously I got frustrated. Mm-hmm. So that opened me up for it. Mm-hmm. And then the projections are flying. And so I can see why Jesus would want Helen in this case as the example to stop it and work on it. And then it's like she's not carrying it on. I don't know if I'm making sense with that, but not perpetuating it and breeding it and spreading it, you know? And so it's really cool how these cameos, I can always find something in them where I can, you know, take it and relate to something that's going on in the lesson, to see where even in myself that it was the best thing for me to do was to get out of my ego and stop that cycle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be part of it. I was like, no, what am I doing? I need to be out of this. I don't want to be part of it, because I didn't want to spread it, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yep. It's always, we have no slack. We always have to come. It always comes back to looking at our own thoughts. So thank you for that, Cheryl. What was that, Paula?
Going within.
Going within. Absolutely. That's always the answer. Beautiful. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions and your sharing. And I'm just looking at the time. So we'll break for tonight, and we shall resume again with cameo 19 next week. So I look forward to that. That'll be kind of a short cameo. We'll see. Maybe we'll do more than one. Anyway, love you all. Thank you so much.
Love you.
Have a great week.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Love you.
Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.